Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. It's so good for us to step back into 1 Corinthians and talk with Thomas Milburn about Christian maturity, the mark of a genuine disciple of Jesus. Before we get there, go to calvarybible.com, click your campus, find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. Like always, stay connected, get connected at calvarybible.com. Let's get to the show. So good to be with you, Thomas.
I miss the theme music.
Well, you got to log in and hear it when YouTube or on the podcasting network that you choose to listen to us.
Yeah, people don't realize that we film this thing in two sections now.
It's true. It's very true.
Because normally, like before, music would kick on.
Right.
Be like theme music. I'd get all excited.
Get jazzed.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, here we go. But now it's like this cold start.
Yep.
Feels like this morning, my car trying to get going.
How amazing is it? We went through all of Christmas break with beautiful weather, and then we get back into rhythm, and it's freezing cold.
I know. I think it's my kids. I was taking them to school, and it's like the whole week or the whole break, there's no snow.
Right.
We did go up to the mountains to sled, but you don't get to sled at your local hill.
Right.
And then the first day back at school,
yeah,
like just dumping snow.
It's like, oh, painful. It is painful. So how was your break?
It was good.
Yeah?
I had a good break. Got to see some great family that came in from California. I love them and enjoyed some time playing games. Played a lot of Ticket to Ride.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Is it?
Oh, I love Ticket to Ride. We played Ticket to Ride quite a bit over Christmas.
Apparently there's like more versions now.
Yeah. For about
they have been,
5 years, we would buy a version every Christmas.
Okay.
So we have several of them.
Are they significantly different?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's rule variations in all of them.
Yeah.
And they're fun. But we played Ticket to Ride. It was the first time that the kids were actually competitive.
Oh, yeah.
And the scoring got really close. So there was some double checking in math based upon how close it was.
Do your kids get upset when, like, obviously routes are coming to the same locations.
Yes.
And then you take the one-way route.
Totally.
And it's like, why'd you do that? I'm trying to complete a route here.
Yeah. Actually, this was a season I actually had to watch how I built because I had some experts in the room finally. And it was like really tough, cutthroat.
Is it a faux pas to build on routes that don't actually impact your route, but sabotage other people's?
No, that's a strategy.
That's a strategy.
That's a strategy. Okay. It's cutthroat, cool, just like how Western Expansion was, probably. I actually have always asked my family to buy me a train conductor hat just so when I play the game, I wear it. Kristen's like, you're not wearing that thing.
No. Oh, man.
No. I do have a pocket watch I pull out occasionally to check the time.
That's great. So I have an app that I count everything up on. Yeah. Is that how you do it?
It's only.
Yeah.
Only professionals use that app. Yeah, you're speaking my language. I love Settlers. The problem is it is boring compared to Ticket to Ride.
It's a little slower. Unless you play Expansion, because then you can actually buy in between every turn.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We want to thank our sponsors for this show, Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
And Settlers of Catan. They don't know they're sponsoring us yet, but they will.
Is it Days of Wonder? Who's the brand that makes it?
Is that who it is?
Yeah, totally. Anyways, hey, it's so good to be with you. New year, new you. You got a beard.
What do you think? I could take this thing to like.
Oh, here? You could.
How long does it take to get there?
Probably a year.
A year?
A good year.
I don't know if I could be committed through warm weather.
Yeah, that's when it gets tough, I bet.
I went skiing and it was awesome for the first time. This is the longest I've ever had a beard.
Right.
And I had all this like ice crystals all over my face everywhere. And I thought I would just like pull it off, but they were stuck to my face.
Right. You have to melt. They just have to melt. Yeah. It's so great. You know what? It's a. For men who do not have hair north, but we can grow hair south of the nose, it's super fun because in ski season, you actually feel wind through your beard.
Yeah.
And you're like, I never feel wind through my hair anymore. Now I do.
This is what most people feel like when they're driving a convertible.
That's probably true. Hey, so 1 Corinthians 8, we're back in it. Back on the train, if you want to give that metaphor again. Another turn there. Yeah, we're 1 Corinthians 8. We've marched through seven chapters of 1 Corinthians. You did a recap this week a little bit of where we've been, who we are, where we're going, just in case we forgot. What is sticking out to you as you prep for sort of the second half of 1 Corinthians that wasn't sticking out for you in the first half?
Well, I think in one sense, like, this is where the letter really turns to, like, Paul's insights of how to be the body of Christ together. And, man, I just so appreciate his love and care for the congregation itself. I think we as Americans, maybe in the West, I don't know, we have just so reduced our Christianity to an individual experience with God, individual salvation, individual practice, individual attendance of churches. We make decisions like, is this church good for me? Does this church upset me? If I'm offended with a brother, I might just leave the church and go find another church. People land at our churches that are coming with other church baggage. Right. And you just think, okay, in Corinth, there's one church. And if you're not going to be at it, you know, maybe you go start Second Baptist. I don't know.
Right.
But Paul's concern is how do we stay together? Like, we have a diversity of background, diversity of opinions, diversity of experience, diversity of socioeconomic class. Let's not just keep starting churches based on all of these different homogenous groups that we circle up with. How do we fight for unity with diversity, which is really fulfilling, I think, what Jesus prayed for us. This is John 17. I think we talk about it a lot. I know Zach mentions it in Thornton regularly, which is Jesus' prayer for the future disciples, those who would hear because of the testimony of the present disciples and come to faith, that they would be one as he and the Father are one. Like, that is perfect union. Mm-hmm. And so how do we deal with that? And we get to 1 Corinthians 8. They got an issue, just like all churches.
And it's about Christian liberty, what we can do and what we can't do, what we should do and what we shouldn't do among the family of God, right?
Which, I mean, you've been in a life group. You're in a life group. I'm in a life group. Right. This comes up all the time, just in conversation, is, can we do that? Should we do that? Should they do that? Can they do that? Is this the mature thing to do?
Right.
In a variety of questions.
Yeah. On
all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Can you think of
examples where you had to consider whether an action is permissible?
Yeah.
Within the context of who you are and what you're doing in the world.
Well, I think we'd say these are gray areas, right? Or we might say specifically, they're not explicit commands in the Bible. Right. Now, some might disagree, like, hey, this was mentioned in a Levitical code.
Yeah.
Was that fulfilled by Jesus or not? Do we have to follow that to the letter of the law or not? But generally speaking, these are not like, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not bear false testimony.
Yeah.
This is, hey, should I drink?
Yeah.
Should I smoke? Should I get a tattoo?
Should I participate in Halloween?
Do we watch radar movies in our house?
I mean, I grew up in a church called the Church of Christ where it wasn't permissible to have instruments as you lead worship.
Yeah.
Because nowhere in the New Testament does it say you should do it.
So these are the things, right?
Yeah.
And so now you got a bunch of people in a church. And then I think the other thing that to remember is, people have come into the church from an unchurched background.
Yes.
So it's not as though they come from a Baptist background or a Lutheran background or a Church of Christ background, and they're bringing their Christian experience to the church. Yep. They actually don't have Christian experience. So right. What they're bringing is their unchurched, you know, pagan experience with temple worship that's all sorts of crazy, if not perverted, and they're trying to figure out, how do we follow Jesus out of that?
Yeah, and so we sit in the pew or the chair this Sunday with 1 Corinthians 8, and let's be honest, we've never asked the question, is our meat sacrifice to idols?
Yeah.
And they are worried and wondering, what do we do, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the context of the church in Corinth, and why is meat sacrifice such a big deal?
Well, meat is not like we think of meat. As we mentioned on Sunday, like, we're going to go home and have a burger, have some chicken fingers, we're going to Chick-fil-A. They don't have fast food, you know, chicken restaurants or anything really with meat. So meat is almost exclusively eaten part of a temple ceremony. And so the temples have worship that's happening there. They have deities that they sense are happening there. And so being sacrificed to an idol infects the meat. So the meat now that I'm going to ingest is connected with this temple worship, if not this deity. And so ingesting the meat is ingesting that deity into my body, or, you know, whatever that temple worship is. And so people got questions where you say, well, should we be eating meat anymore, sacrificed that are at temples or not? Mm. And some of these Christians who think they have a theological defense for why they should are saying, I can, I have the liberties to do that. And others who are, it says, weak in conscience. I think Zach Thompson, who teaches on the Thornton campus, had maybe the best description of what that means. It means like unsettled. Mm. Like they just, I called them baby Christians. Mm. It's like, I just don't know. And they're going to look to the people who think they know, or at least they say they know, and they're going to model their beliefs after theirs. And what Paul's saying is, hey, some of you guys who think you know it all actually don't know it all. And by not knowing all, you haven't considered the impact on these unsettled Christians and their faith.
So here's the question then. How should our awareness of other spiritual maturity influence our decision about our exercise and freedom in Christ?
Yeah, I think I saw three things that Paul walks through. They're not explicit, but I think they're implicit. One is, hey, you guys who think you're all know-it-alls, consider love. Love is more than knowledge.
I like where we're going here.
So 1 Corinthians 13 even says, if you have all knowledge and understand all mysteries and you don't have love, what love essentially is the care and concern of another. You don't have love, like you're nothing. It doesn't say like, you know, you're inadequate or you're deficient. You're nothing. And so back to 1 Corinthians 8 when he says, okay, those who love God are known by God. The greatest virtue is love. So first, yes, you can make a theological defense why you have permission to eat meat sacrificed to idols, or you have permission to X, Y, or Z. But have you considered how this impacts your brother? Is this the loving thing to do? Is this the care and concern for less mature believers who are unsettled in their faith? Have you thought about that? And it's like, oh, well, that didn't come to my mind. Okay.
So you're saying that love is the central point of making these decisions, first and foremost.
Love is the measure of maturity.
Okay.
And so they're boasting how mature they are based on their knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think Paul is saying, actually, there's a different marker in the Christian world, which is your love, your care, and concern for your brother.
So, I mean, this goes outside of 1 Corinthians 8. This is like, you want to look for a mature Christian to follow, look for someone who loves well.
Yeah.
That's basically what you're saying.
And I'm so excited to get to 1 Corinthians 13 and however many weeks it's going to take to get there, because love isn't just love.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just accept all things. It's not just tolerate everything. Like, love rejoices in the truth, right? It does not rejoice in error. It doesn't celebrate in what's wrong. And so it's not as though love just is this wishy-washy, oh, just let people do whatever they want. No, it is directional. Mm-hmm. It is truthful. It's more robust than we think of love. But it is the care and the concern of another. Because most of us are trying to make this decision. Can I eat that? Do I have the right to eat that? Do I have the permission to eat that? Do I have the privilege to eat that? Well, does that impact someone else? Why would I care about that?
So maybe the question is it loving for me?
That's right.
To do this?
That's good.
Yeah.
So think about that. Like, so some of our examples. Like, what kind of Christian liberties do you think come to mind?
Yeah, I think let's do one that's a really softball one. Should we celebrate Halloween?
Yeah.
You know, should Christian participate? Should you put lawn decorations? Should you?
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. What do you think?
So you took that same question and you brought it to 1 Corinthians 8.
Yeah.
And he said, Paul, we're concerned. Here's some things we're writing about. Can we celebrate Halloween?
Are you worshiping demons? Are you participating in demon acts?
Totally.
Are you worshiping dead?
Do you know what this holiday is?
Have you ever heard the Witch of Windor of the Old Testament?
Yeah.
That Saul visits.
And I think what Paul would say is, it depends. Like, we know, you can make a theological defense, there's nothing really behind this holiday. Like, it's man-made.
I like how you talked about idols, actually, and he talks about in 1 Corinthians, why, you know, they're just made of the wood that you just cut and you put in the fire to keep yourself.
Which I think that's what you're saying with Halloween. It's like, they're just masks. Now, there might be some parameters of like, well, can I dress up as this or that? And you're like, okay, I'm not saying you just go dress up as death itself and walk around as a Christian. Why would you do that? But can I dress up as a superhero, or can I dress up as, you know, Davy Crockett? Like, you know, it's like so many variations. And that's why I think Paul would say, well, it depends. Like, I'm not going to let you make black and white the world that the Bible hasn't made explicit. And so therefore, what I'm going to tell you is, well, is it loving? Have you first marker is, right. Have you considered how this impacts others in the church? And I think that Halloween's an interesting one, because if you came out of an unchurched background, and here's the thing, and you were intimately involved in the witchcraft of Halloween.
Yes.
So it's not as though you came from an unchurched background and you didn't participate in it at all.
Right.
But you're like, mom was a Wiccan.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, holy cow, you guys celebrate Halloween? That thing is insane. You should have seen the things that my family did. And now we have some Christians that are trick-or-treating. Now you have a conflict of conscience.
Right.
And I think that's where Paul's saying, okay, for the sake of your brother, are you willing to abbreviate your liberties? Mm-hmm. Now, just because some people are concerned that you do certain things, does that mean you have to abbreviate your life?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's sort of like, let's take drinking alcohol, which in a culture of Colorado is like very loose and goose, mm-hmm. and is very socially acceptable for all parties to drink alcohol. But like, you go to the Latin American church and you will never find a pastor drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Because that is a leftover from sort of the Catholic church tradition, mm-hmm. that priests didn't do that.
Latin America. And again,
and come out of social economics where alcoholism is a major factor in sort of the undermining of family systems, yeah. in Latin America.
And I think that's the point, Jay, is what is the consequence of my actions where people think I'm the more mature believer.
Right.
And then they follow in my steps and fall into, this is the whole concern, is fall into or back into,
right.
their practices of life apart from Christ. So it's not just like, is this right or wrong? It's, well, what happens to my brother or sister who sees me approving of something and then practices it and then falls away from Christ? So think of like the alcoholic family where, well, look at my pastor. He just drinks, in public all the time, no big deal. So then they do, but their family has a history of alcoholism. Or he comes out of alcoholism.
Right.
And they fall back into it. And that moves to Paul's second point, is do you not see what the potential consequences could be for the brothers and sisters who are less unsettled?
Yeah.
So and I think that's a huge marker.
You encapsulated this in wisdom early on. Love is the measure of maturity. Love for others limits my liberties. I think that's really important for us to understand. It's like, before I say, if I can do it, is this beneficial to my brothers and sisters? And if not, I'm going to limit myself because I love them more than I love my freedom,
mm-hmm.
which is a big statement in the American church.
I think so.
Yeah, like it's loaded.
Well, I mean, like, when was the last time you think you feel like you really limited a freedom that you had?
Right. I can think of a couple, but okay. Yes. But for the sake of others, yes.
Yeah, for the sake of others.
Yeah.
I mean, this got to do, I mean, again, this was the main problem with vaccines and masks and the whole shooting match.
I mean, we're getting deep into the weeds here, my friend.
But like, you can't just get up and just say these things in front of a group of a few thousand people, because everyone's like, hold on a second, what are you saying?
Right.
You're like, I'm not giving you an answer, just like Paul didn't. Paul is saying, have you considered these things? Have you considered what would be the loving thing to do?
Right.
I know you can give yourself a theological defense of what you have liberties to do, but have you considered what might be the loving thing to do? And then, have you considered how this impacts your brother, not just you? Yeah. And you might actually set some liberties aside.
Well, I think the most theological point is that the greatest example of this is Jesus Christ himself, yes. who had ultimate freedom, ultimate liberties,
yeah.
who set aside some of those for the sake of others more than once.
Yeah, which I think is, and that's just, I think the third observation in the right. text is, when you cause your brother to stumble because you refuse to amend your liberties, you're actually causing the bride of Christ himself, an offense. And so this actually isn't even about you or your brother. It's how are you honoring God in right. your life? And that's where he's going to land in chapter 10, is do it all to the glory of God.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, is it the loving thing? My love for my brother limits these liberties. Oh, yeah, Jesus is my example, like you're saying. Oh, he did that for me. Okay. Well, I want to make much of Christ. I'm totally willing to surrender liberties like he surrendered for me,
yeah.
for the sake of others.
Yeah, he surrendered so much of his liberties for my sake that it's almost shameful for me to claim my rights
yeah.
when I view him. I was thinking a lot about, and I don't know the connection here, and this might be just a tangent, but man, I was thinking about Paul's really talking about what a resurrected life looks like. We didn't use that language on Sunday, but in 1 Corinthians, he makes much of the resurrection in the first four chapters, sort of the impetus for what he's going to talk about for the rest of the book, clearly, until chapter 15. So how does my view of my resurrected life shape these things? Does that make sense?
For my Do you have an answer in your, is this like a rhetorical question?
No, not at all. I was just thinking like, man, the resurrected life is about me denying the freedoms I have in order to help others live into a resurrected life.
Yeah. You might even say it this way. If you're not able to deny the freedoms that you have, are you actually free? So like, if you're unwilling to adjust some freedoms, is that really a freedom that you have, or is it an idol that you're enslaved to?
Yeah.
So I think it was Tim Keller who made this comment about alcohol. He said, you actually don't know who the alcoholic is at a dinner party based on who's drinking. Mm-hmm. It's the person who is, how do you say it? It's the person who's upset that there isn't alcohol at a dinner party that you have to be concerned with. So like, wow, that person's drinking this or that. They must be an alcoholic. No, but it's the person walking around going, man, there's no alcohol at this party. There's a bunch of prudes here.
Yeah.
Like, well, what's going on? And it's like an insight of what might actually be an idol in their life. Mm-hmm. And so the resurrection life is, hey, you are totally free. Mm-hmm. Like Jesus has freed you to eternal life, freed you above the law that's been fulfilled. His righteousness is your righteousness. Like, holy smokes.
Right.
Now the question is, are you willing to let go of those liberties?
Yeah.
And if you are, then you know they don't own you.
Yep.
If you're not, maybe they occupy a place in your life that's bigger than you realize.
Yeah, I think we have the example of Jesus, and then I can think of Paul himself saying, I'm a slave, I'm a bondservant. He has all freedom, but he chooses to become a slave for the sake of Christ.
Yeah.
And for Christ's sake as well. And I think that's really important that Paul is not declaring to them out of just because he's telling them what to do. He's actually living this. Mm-hmm. He's forsaken some of his religious liberties. But although he does claim, this is the caveat, he does claim his Roman rights to get to Rome for the sake of the gospel.
I was going to say, it goes into this next few weeks where it's like, he's willing to do all of that for the sake of the gospel.
Yeah.
Right.
So what are you willing to do for the sake of the gospel?
And we're mostly concerned is what are we willing to do for the sake of us? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
So the reason he exercises that right that's his of citizenship is to advance the gospel.
Right.
We are doing it for our own ego, pride, self-preservation. Now, I think it's right to exercise it for the safety of others, for the restraint of evil, for justice. I mean, like, all of those things. You're like, yeah, man, absolutely, let's go to the court of law so that we would prevent those things from hurting other people.
No doubt.
But no, I think you're totally right. Like, we just need to, we need the wisdom to know when. I think, you know, the sphere that, we didn't talk about this at all on Sunday, that I think gets impacted the most when you have a more learned Christian, so mm-hmm. more knowledgeable Christian, and then you have a less knowledgeable or unsettled Christian in their faith. Right. And where this paradigm gets played out a lot is actually with parenting. Mm. Because your kids are observing you as like basically the barometer of Christian living.
Right.
Or the matrix of it. You know, it's like, if my parents do this, then it must be acceptable. And I think a lot of parents with use of technology, use of alcohol, use of like media, they don't limit themselves. Even though they have the liberty to do these things with their kids. And then their kids, being weak in conscience, unsettled in their faith, are actually falling into traps, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And most parents are like, why would I? What? I'm not doing that. That would be such an inconvenience in my life to amend whatever. You fill in the blank. And I think this text would actually encourage a lot of parents to say, hey, look at those unsettled Christians in your house, your little children. Maybe you don't want to exercise all your liberties for their sake.
For their sake. It's good, man. It's deep. I think it requires, you know, when you talk about wisdom and maturity, it requires that those judgments take time.
Yeah.
You need to consider these things, really meditate on them, examine the scriptures, examine them in the Christian community before you declare what you're going to do, right?
Yeah.
So often we're like, I'm going to just do this right now and rush into these ideas, whereas Christian discernment is really required for wisdom.
And I think that's why most people today will not enjoy 1 Corinthians 8 or this podcast or the message on Sunday, because it requires three things of them that you just mentioned that we are unwilling to give. Mm-hmm. So one is critical thinking. We just want to type into ChatGPT or find an article that gives me the answer. It requires to live in a bit of ambiguity and wisdom as opposed to black and white. So many of us just want to make our faith black and white.
Absolutely.
And then third, it requires that rumination, meditation in community. And it's like you'd have to like slow way down to think, is this what I want to do? What would the impact be? How would this play out? Would this benefit another? Would this build me up? That takes time. So yeah. I have no time. I'm not going to plug into community. I want the right answer, and I don't want to think about this too much.
Yeah.
Well, then I don't know if you can live out First Corinthians 8.
Yeah, and I would say consider the last parable of the Sermon on the Mount, the wise and foolish builder.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Where are you going to build your house, on the rock? In the sand, and I mean, this is serious stuff. You've got to consider what choices you make in our lives.
But think about this. Maybe this would be a good place to leave our listeners, is think of a mentor that really was impactful in helping you understand life, understand who Jesus is. And then just think about how they spent their life with you and maybe imagine some of the liberties that they limited so that you could be in relationship with them.
Yep. No doubt, man. That's a good end. I want to end us today with tuning in to the weekly. We're so grateful you're back, 2025. Like always, you can ask questions on YouTube. You can go to the podcasting, give us a 5-star review. Nothing but a 5-star, right? That's Thomas said.
That's right. Only 5-star reviews. Good.
And we're just so thankful you're logging in and connecting here in this community. Let me leave you with 1 Corinthians 8, Paul's reminder for those who were wrestling with these. He says in verse 6, "Yet for us there is one God, the Father, from whom are all things and from whom we exist, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom are all things and through whom we exist." Don't forget that, brothers and sisters, today as you log in and listen to the podcast, is that you were created by God the Father. You exist by the Lord Jesus Christ, through whom all things, that he has created you. And he loves you. We love you. Thanks for listening. We're always praying for you. And we will see you next week as we talk about 1 Corinthians 9. Thanks, Thomas.